Doc ran after a steaming locomotive along a deserted platform. The train seemed to be empty, apart from the last car, where the window was down and an attractive young woman peeked out, her arms around the shoulders of two little children, a boy and a girl.
Run faster, my dear one, and we can be safe together.
I am trying, my sweet Emily. Before God, I am trying my very best.
But the train pulled away, smoke billowing from the stack, floating along the platform, covering the last car, hiding the dream vision of Doc's wife and children.
No!
Doc awoke with a start, finding he was still sitting in the bathroom, his trousers crumpled around his ankles. With a heavy sense of loss, he cleaned himself and pulled up his pants. He washed his hands, then left the bathroom section, emerging again into the passage. Half asleep, he turned right instead of left, so tired he was barely able to keep his eyes open, stumbling along toward the dormitory. He reached what he thought was the correct door, turned the chromed handle, and pushed it open. The opening of the door triggered stark overhead lighting, showing him three metal tables with a sluice drain at the foot of each, and eight rows of labeled steel cabinets. One of them stood partly open, showing Doc that it was big enough to conceal a fully grown man. It was bitterly cold, Doc's breath pluming out around him like fog.
Oh, by the three Kennedys, but this is not our sleeping quarters.
Behind him, the entrance door had been quietly closing, and now it shut. Doc spun and lunged for the door, only to find that some kind of internal lock had operated, and he couldn't open the door from the inside.
What the deuce?
At the same moment, he saw the sign above the entrance, and the single word, mortuary.
Hello? Somebody! I'm locked in! Jack! Dean! Anybody! Help! Help!
Ryan slid his Sig Sauer into the greased holster, stooping to lace up his steel-toed combat boots.
You're sure about the sec lock out of this section?
Yeah. Soon as I saw Doc gone, Dean and I went looking. Steel locked and bolted from the inside. No sign of Doc anywhere. Would have hated if attacked.
We've got to find him, Dad. There's no telling what could happen in here.
Ryan straightened. JB, Mildred, and Christy were all fully dressed, sitting on beds in the dormitory. Ryan could see by his wrist chron it was nearly 5 a.m.
Don't worry, son. We'll find him. He couldn't get far. You feel him, Christy?
Not really. But I can't properly distinguish one person from another when there's several of us around.
You check the bathroom, Jack? Didn't have a stroke or heart attack on the John, did he?
Phew. First place I looked. Clean as a knife blade in there. Shouted for him. No answer.
Old fart's got to be someplace. Are there some locked rooms?
Ryan stood a moment, locked in thought, nibbling at a ragged edge of a torn nail.
Best we stay together. If he hasn't gotten outside of the section, then there aren't many places he can be.
The group headed out. They checked the outside set bolts to section JA-33 and confirmed what Jack had said. They went through the whole section.
Doc! Doc! Doc!
Where are Doc. You? Doc, Doc, where are you, Doc?
Where are you, man? Doc!
And they waited together in the oppressive stillness to try to catch the sound of a possible reply filtering through the thick concrete walls. But there was nothing. Finally, they stood in a silent half-circle before the last unsearched room, and Mildred read the words on the sign above the door.
Mortuary. And the lock's engaged.
Doc! You in there, Doc?
Silent as a grave. Likely to be cold in there if the power system's still working. Really cold.
Everyone move back. Best shoot out the lock. Shouldn't be triple vanadium steel just for a mortuary.
Doc used to sing that song, Why Build a Wall Around a Graveyard Because Nobody Wants to Get In? Why build a wall around a graveyard because nobody wants to get out?
Yeah.
Ryan positioned the 4.5-inch barrel within a couple of inches of the lock and turned his head away. There was an eruption of orange sparks, and the high-powered rounds shattered the fastening on the morgue's door, the shock of the triple explosion jolting clear up his arm to the shoulder. Ryan holstered his blaster and reached out, turning the handle, pushing the door open. Cold air rushed into the passage like white spray, and all of them felt the biting chill. Mildred pushed past Ryan and ran into the disinfected, freezing room.
Doc!
Yeah.
Where are you?
There, at the very rear, near those rows of deep cabinets.
They ran toward the sound of the voice and found Doc sitting, arms huddled around himself, ice frosted in his hair, his face as white as polished ivory. Only his pale blue eyes showed any sign of life. Mildred knelt at his side, her fingers going to the angle of neck and shoulder, feeling for a pulse. Doc's body felt frozen, the skin like parchment. The flesh was white, blotted with patches of blue and a deeper purple. Veins stood out on the back of his hands like dark whipcord.
His pulse is very slow. We've got to move him and warm him up. Ryan, JB, get your hands beneath his thighs and steady him as you lift.
Doc's head lolled to the right, his eyes closing.
What about the hot water in the showers? It'll raise his temperature.
Yeah, let's go. The Grim Reaper's not getting him yet, not if I can help it.
The frost began to melt away as they carried Doc out of the freezing mortuary and into the corridor. JB and Ryan hurriedly transported him into the shower room.
Strip him off. One of you should, maybe both of you should get in the shower with him to support him. Jack, you and Dean and Christy get a bed ready with plenty of blankets.
Ryan and JB carefully laid the motionless body on the tiled floor and peeled quickly out of their clothes, modestly keeping on their underwear. Mildred turned on the chrome faucets, and a steady stream of warm water was released.
Don't have it too hot for starters. The shock could kill him.
Why don't you go teach your grandma to suck eggs?
Ryan didn't respond, picking one arm and lifting, while the armorer took the other side. They eased Doc into a sitting position under the shower, kneeling alongside to hold him steady.
He could maybe take it just a little hotter.
Hang on. How about that, John?
Better.
The water was now hot enough to steam, condensation streaming down the white tiles. All three men were soaked, huddled close together.
How's he doing? How's the pulse?
It's still a tad slow, but not far off normal.
Maybe we should get him straight into a bed right now.
Doc's eyes blinked open, and he gazed around, his expression blankly puzzled, as he took in Ryan and JB on either side of him on the floor of the shower. Then he became aware of his own nakedness. Finally, he turned his head and saw Mildred staring down at him.
Shut up, Doc. It's not the time for your humor.
Well, I was freezing in a desperately cold place.
What? Doc, for once, just this once, save it for later. Get him up and out of there, guys.
The water was turned off, the last drop streaming down the sluice, vanishing through the chromed drain cover. Ryan and JB helped Doc out, almost carrying him between them, along the short stretch of corridor to the dormitory. Mildred had found an armful of large white towels, made from a thick, fluffy material in a closet. She handed one each to JB and Ryan, and gave a third one to Christy, keeping the fourth towel for herself. Both women started to rub the old man dry, scrubbing at his pallid skin until it glowed with the friction. Doc opened his eyes for a moment.
Where is your sense of dignity, ladies? I am shamed.
You'd have been dead, Doc, if we hadn't got to you in time. That morgue was arctic cold.
For once, I cannot find the means to argue with you, madam. Except, I think that I can manage to dry my own private parts, if you have no medical objections.
Sure. Help yourself, Doc. Have a towel. Scrub well. Then we'll get you under the blankets for an hour or so. You'll be fine.
Mildred's judgment was dead on. Just the single hour had drifted by when the long shape under the heaped blankets began to stir. The tangled head emerged into the stark lights of the dormitory. Doc's teeth had stopped chattering, and some color had returned to his seamed cheeks. Ryan and Christy were at his bedside. Dean sat cross-legged on the bed next to Doc.
And the three Kennedys! That place was cold as death itself. But now I am myself.
Thought we might eat some more of them stored cans, Doc.
Those stored cans, lover. Sounds like a good idea. Then we can head outside and see where we've ended up.
I smelled that pine scent again.
Me too. One of the nicest things I've ever smelled.
I would not be averse to spending some time in the pines where the sun never shines. And I'll shiver the whole night through.
After they finished eating and disposed of the dirty dishes and cans and the clattering garbage dispenser, Ryan called them all together.
Make sure you've got all of your clothes and weapons.
Everyone went through the motions of checking their blasters, although Ryan knew it was quite unlikely that any of them, even absent-minded Doc, would walk out into Deathlands unarmed. He then led the way out of the living quarters, with JB carefully closing the sec door behind them. The main entrance was only about 300 yards away, past a number of locked side doors. One of them was labeled on the central map as being the armory, and JB spent a little time there trying to work it open. But it flatly resisted all of his efforts. He rejoined the others, waiting for him by the enormous double sec doors. Dean stood poised by the control pad.
It's got me beat. Wish we'd gotten some Plasex. Though from what we've seen, they'd likely have stripped it bare before the final evac.
Usual code, Dad?
Try it.
How about the risk of a booby trap?
I don't feel anything.
Doubt they'd put one on the outer doors. No. Their only worry was obviously of someone coming in the back door through the Matrans. Try the 352 code, son. See what it brings us. But be ready to reverse the number code and close the sec doors at the first hint of a threat.
It brought success as the hidden machinery began to open the double doors, shifting hundreds of tons of vanadium steel strong enough to withstand anything except a direct nuke hit. Ryan had positioned himself at the center of the gates, the six-hour drawn and cocked. He squinted through the widening gap, alert for any sign of danger, silently watching as the doors slid wider and wider, revealing 40 or 50 feet of the ground outside. He saw a bright sun throwing stark shadows, and the intoxicating smell of pines flooded into the redoubt. Dean moved away as the doors shuddered to their full width. There was a wide plateau of bare rock just outside, then the fringes of what looked like a solid wall of green pines towering skyward. Ryan stepped into the opening, glancing toward the blue sky, noting the streaks of white clouds, with some swelling thunderheads away to the north. A bird of prey, looking like a bald eagle, was riding a thermal 1,000 feet above him, scanning the forest below for signs of potential food. His blaster slid back into its holster as Ryan stood, feet apart, taking in a deep breath of the fresh, bright air. Jack scanned the ground outside the sec doors for any sign of life, animal, human, or mutie. JB took a tiny comp sextant out of one of his capacious pockets.
Fire blast, but that's good.
I don't see nothing. Looks like nobody found the place.
That forest seems as solid as a wall. Must have grown fast and sealed off any road there might have been way back around the Long Winters. JB, where do you put us?
Just a minute.
Mildred shaded her eyes against the brightness of the sun and peered out toward the west over the tops of the trees. JB seemed satisfied with his findings and put his instrument back in his pocket. Suddenly, Mildred pointed.
What's that?
Where?
Silvery. Big lake, or maybe even a sea of some kind.
Pacific Ocean. Near as I can make it, we're in the middle of California.
Really? But where's that memory of yours for the topography of our long-gone United States? Can't you be a bit more specific?
I'd say that the closest of the old Villes to where we are now would be Fresno.
I took part in a free pistol competition there back in 99. I beat everyone in the Pan American Games, scored 996, if I remember right. Four more than a skinny little guy from Brooklyn.
Fresno would have been around 50 miles west of us, over yonder. See that glint of distant water? That's Pacific, all right.
But it only looks to be a scant 40 or so leagues away. Surely the coast should be closer to a good 150 miles off.
You're forgetting Skyduck, Doc. Word from the old ones who lived through it was that most of all of Western California simply slipped into the sea. 100% death toll. The San Andreas Fault went at hour one, and the whole maze of seismic lines opened up like a wet string. Dumped the land into the sea, brought the coast way up into the foothills of the Sierras.
I forgot that. What a fuzzy-minded old fool I am, to be sure, to be sure. So we could be close to that part of California where the tall trees used to be?
Right. There are national parks in this region, and we know that redoubts often got built in such places. Sequoia and King's Canyon. The tall trees, Doc.
Ryan had walked across the plateau, looking down at the clearly man-made surface of impacted gravel, still showing the century-old marks of deeply ridged tires. As he closed on the fringe of skyscraping pines, Ryan noticed that there were the remains of some stubby stone bollards circling the edge of the roadway. At one point, there were the traces of a two-lane blacktop running toward the northwest. But the greening had enveloped the road, and it vanished under the shadowy branches. Christy came to Ryan's side and rested her hand lightly in the crook of his right elbow. He put his arm around her shoulders, feeling the sun-warmed material of her white shirt.
Are we stuck here, lover? It'd be a shame if we can't do some exploring. It seems like such a beautiful place.
It does. You don't feel any stickies in the neighborhood, do you?
No, nothing except for some sort of background wildlife sensations. I can't say I'm aware of any sense of danger.
I'm sure we can use that old highway as a sort of lodestar to get us away from here. Trees aren't impenetrable. Should be able to move through them.
We going, Ryan?
Why not? Everyone ready to do some backcountry hiking? Ryan began to pick his way between the striated trunks of the pines and headed downhill, using the barely visible remnants of the blacktop to guide him. The other strung out behind him. It took only a short time for Ryan to realize that he had been a little optimistic about the ease of following the old lost road through the woods. For some of the time, it was almost as though there had never been a road through the woods. Time and the weather had washed parts of it away, and the fast-growing pines had broken through the tarmac in many places. But it was at least some sort of guide, carrying them gradually downhill from the abandoned redoubt. The sun was a constant presence, breaking through the pools of dappled shadow. Away toward the far north, however, the crew noticed that the sky was darkening with banks of snowy thunderheads. The scent of the pines was so strong and omnipresent that they almost stopped noticing it. The tall, slender pines that had masked the main entrance to the redoubt were gradually absorbed into a region of mixed forest. They strolled through a magnificent mixture of ancient oaks, shivering aspens, white firs, dogwoods, sugar pines, and cottonwoods, with a smattering of massive sequoias. A rust-colored squirrel darted up an oak that stood close to the pathway, chattering angrily at the invasion of its territory. The flowers and shrubs were just as impressive. Vivid orange and startling white lilies, lupine and bracken ferns. There was also a wealth of bird life, including ravens and owls, a jay perched on a high feathery branch, swaying backward and forward in the rising wind, its dark beady eyes watching the seven humans far below it. The call of chickadees could be heard throughout the forest.
Godfrey, my little chickadees.
Say what, Doc?
Women are like elephants. I like to look at them, but I wouldn't want to own one.
You sure you're feeling okay, Doc?
Of course I'm okay. I was treating you to my impression of W.C. Fields.
Which fields are those, Doc?
Oh, by the three Kennedys, have none of you heard of the great McGonagall?
Take it easy, Doc. Don't get worked up. I know who you're talking about.
Coyote?
Yeah. Used to be bear and bobcats around here, too. I wouldn't be surprised if they made a good recovery without man to hunt them out.
Well, my apologies. I feared for a moment there that I was about to vomit copiously.
Let me check your forehead, Doc. Kinda hot. Could be that you're in for a touch of flu.
I confess to feeling a few inches below par, Dr. Wyeth. Slight headache and soreness in the throat. Perhaps it is only a touch of the sun, or a mild attack of altitude sickness. But I am more than determined to forge ahead. Let us proceed, shall we?
Shortly, they emerged from the forest onto the buckled remnants of an old highway, and followed it as it meandered north and eastward, sometimes between the high walls of a sheer gorge, with a river running along its bottom. Dean saw a bullet-pocked, rusting road sign, and ran ahead of the others to read it.
198!
Sounds right. I have a feeling it's a highway that runs through Visalia, all the way toward the coast. Linked up with what used to be Highway 101. Way we're heading, I reckon we should finish up in the heart of the national park. See taller trees than you ever imagined.
Is it true that there's one you can drive a wag through?
I believe there used to be, but I think it fell some years before Skydark. I expect the trees in the park should be something, if the quakes didn't bring them all crashing down.
The road wound its way into a canyon and beside the river, which tumbled over vast rounded boulders in a flurry of ceaseless busy foam. The rumbling noise seemed to fill the canyon.
Running water always makes me want to take a leak.
Nobody's stopping you, my dear lady. You have 1,000 miles of backcountry to choose from.
I'll wait a while. Good training for the muscles. There may be a rest area just around the corner.
They did in fact come across a rest area, less than a quarter mile around the next bend. It was off to the right, set back into a wide recess under the cliffs, across the highway from the river. A central area housed the restrooms, as well as a number of shaded tables and benches. The rusting remains of barbecue units were visible here and there among the coarse grasses. Ryan glanced sideways at Christy, the silent question visible in his eye. She paused a moment, then shook her head.
Nothing human or muty, though I get the feeling there are animals close by here.
Likely more coyotes?
Could be.
Guess we'll find out sooner or later. I feel thirsty, Glover. I'm going to take a drink from the river.
Christy watched Ryan cross the deserted highway, the steepling sun throwing his shadow around his ankles. She glanced down at her own booted feet and saw one of the Deathlands daisies, white and yellow, growing from the dusty soil. She stepped carefully around it and joined the others by the concrete block at the center of the rest area. They were looking at a notice board. It was around 7 feet high, double-sided, with a brown metal frame that was covered in break-resistant, transparent plastic, which had become scratched and weathered over the years. One notice warned about the dangers of wild animals such as bears, snakes, and panthers, stressing that they weren't tame and that feeding them was totally forbidden under park regulations. Next to it was a warning about backcountry hiking, making the point that hikers should always register any planned hike and sign on and off with rangers at approved designated sites, marked on the small map on the board. But what interested Christy and the others were the crudely hand-lettered unattributed notices that had been stuck beneath the plastic covers, obscuring some of the original official messages. Ryan had rejoined the others, wiping his mouth from his drink, and he read them over Christy's shoulders.
War is here. This region is under martial control. Leave now and return to your homes. No photography or videos. Trespassers are likely to be shot on sight.
Must have gone up in the last hours before the state slipped into the Civic.
Look on the outside wall of the John over there. Paint's almost gone, but you can read the message. Short and sweet. Go home or get shot. Within a day, virtually everyone in the whole country was either dead or dying.
They stood in silence, each of them lost in their private thoughts, trying to imagine what those last moments had been like, the chilling awareness of impending doom before the skies were filled with missiles.
Spooky to see a reminder like this. Hardly ever see anything that was so close to those final hours.
Excuse me for interrupting the cheerful mood, but I've got to go use the facilities, or I'll burst.
Take care. Remember, you might find spiders or snakes or scorpions in an abandoned building like that. Looks as if the roof's been torn open on the far side there, so watch out.
I'll be fine. Back in a minute.
The outer door had lost all of its paint from 100 years of weathering, and there were deep scratches down its surface, leaving raw splinters of white wood. The brass handle was covered in a thick coating of green verdigris. Mildred tried to turn it, but it was seized up solid. She put more of her weight behind it, and it creaked stiffly, then jerked inward. She could see dazzling sunlight spearing through the damaged roof, and a pile of dried leaves scuffed around her boots. She sniffed, then wrinkled her nose at the hot, acrid smell of stale urine that filled the place, surprising after such a long time. The inner door stood slightly ajar, and Mildred had the momentary illusion that something had moved inside the restroom, but she decided that it was only the leaves that carpeted the tiled floor. She was acutely aware of the growing pressure on her bladder, and she pushed open the heavy door with the heel of her left hand, her right already reaching down for the silver buckle on her thick leather belt. Her head passed directly through the lancing sunshine, making her blink, blinded for a moment. The door swung shut behind her, and the bitter, feral smell was much stronger. Mildred heard a rustling sound, though she was standing quite still, and there wasn't a breath of wind in the building. She became suddenly aware that she wasn't alone. There was a patch of darkness in the black shadows in the far corner. Her vision was already adjusting to the mix of light and shade, and she froze, except for her hand that slid slowly toward the butt of the Czech revolver on her hip. It was an enormous black panther, crouched on its haunches, the tip of its tail flicking from side to side. She could see the golden eyes fixed on her, the ears flattened along the angular skull. The beast, at least 12 feet in length, began to make a sound as it stretched its front paws, the honed, curved claws scratching on the floor. Its jaws opened, and Mildred caught the taint of its hot, rancid breath, seeing the ivory glint of its teeth.
God.
Mildred felt the short hairs prickling at the nape of her neck. There was a dreadful temptation to scream out for help, knowing that JB and the others would be with her in less than 5 beats of the heart, their blasters ripping the magnificent creature to ragged fur and shards of bloodied bone. But her razor-sharp mind overrode that temptation, knowing that the panther would leap at her and bear her to the ground, powerful hind legs ripping at her belly, spilling her guts all over the floor, its teeth clamping on her skull, crunching the fragile bones, squeezing eyes from their sockets. That would only take two beats of her heart.
Nice, nice, kitty.
Slowly, her fingers reached the butt of the ZKR-551, resting there, waiting to make the next move. The panther's back twitched, with the desire to charge and rend and kill. Outside, the six companions found a patch of shade to sit down in. The conversation turned, amid that wilderness, to which kind of wood could best be hewed and which burned with the best flame.
I have hacked away at a log of black walnut. There is something slippery about it. However careful you might be in setting the blade of the axe into a straight line, the black walnut always splits in an oddly curved way, with a gentle bent to it.
That's true, Doc, but nothing burns cleaner and fresher than a cord of applewood.
Cherry's mighty sweet. Uncle Tyus McCann cut down a whole ancient orchard on the edge of Harmony. It burned for a winter and a half. Lovely scent.
Seasoned pine, fine in winter. Opinion most any time. In swamps was hard finding good dry wood.
Mildred's taking a long time. Think she's all right?
Would have shouted if she wasn't. Maybe her stomach's reacting to that pan-fried chicken she had last night.
Mildred slowly inched the revolver 3/4 out of its holster. Her eyes still fixed on the panther's face, she caressed the trigger with her index finger. The animal was bowstring tense, its muscles twitching beneath the coat of fine black fur. Its ears were still flattened against its skull, and its primal eyes glowed in the dim light. Mildred kept the blaster at her side, her thumb making contact with the spurred hammer. She was aware of sweat trickling down the small of her back, between her breasts, over her stomach. The salty liquid beaded her forehead and cheeks. The huge, muty carnivore was so aware of any movement from its intended prey that Mildred didn't dare to move her gun farther, sensing that the panther would react immediately by charging across the restroom at her. The wind outside stirred some of the dried rubbish, trapped in the splintered ruins of the angled roof. An aspen leaf came loose and silently spun down into the warm space, whirling around and around. Mildred watched it out of the corner of her eyes, also watching the eyes of the panther, seeing that the beast was fascinated by the light brown spinning leaf. Somehow, she knew that the falling dead leaf was going to spark the charge, so she readied herself for the fastest draw of her life. But the panther was quicker, and springing from its crouch, powered toward her. Mildred finished drawing the revolver, thumbing and firing in a single fluid action. The shortfall thumb-cocking hammer fell on the chambered 38 caliber round. Mildred was aware of the shutter of the explosion running clear up to her elbow. Then, the leaping panther hit her chest high and knocked her flat on her back. Outside, JB was the quickest to react to the sudden noises. His Uzi gripped in his right hand as he sprinted the few steps toward the restroom. He crashed into the door and sent it spinning off broken hinges. Ryan was at his heels, and both of them froze at what they saw inside. Mildred lay still, sprawled on her back, her knees drawn up. One hand gripped the gleaming revolver and pressed the muzzle against the side of its skull. Huddled on top of her, it snarled, its jaws open, and bright crimson blood dribbled over its curved teeth. There was more blood splashed on its chest, toward the right shoulder. Mildred was bathed in sweat, her eyes impossibly wide. She stared at the two men, gritting her teeth.
Dark knife!
No, don't move! It's mine!
Ryan was about to ignore Mildred and chance a shot at the panther, but events unfolded at lightning speed. The animal was recovering from the first snap shot. Mildred, shaken by the attack and the fall, squeezed the trigger of the ZKR-551 a second time. The noise of the 38 caliber round muffled by the barrel being jammed against the creature's head. The bullet smashed through the dense wall of its skull, puddling the brains, then exited on the far side. Mildred rolled free, scrambling to the opposite wall of the restroom, holding the revolver ahead of her, gripping the butt in both hands to keep it steady.
It's done for, Mildred.
Christy, Doc, Dean, and Jack had come inside, past the smashed door, and watched the slaughter of the big animal.
Let me give you a hand, Mildred.
Thanks. Whew, real close call there.
Mildred holstered the warm blaster on her second attempt, reached to take Christy's proffered hand, and pulled herself upright.
How did it get in?
The entire entourage turned their eyes incredulously toward Dean's, then moved their gaze upward to indicate the huge hole in the roof.
Oh, yeah, that way.
Ryan turned to exit the building, and the group of friends followed. Once outside, he looked around at the circle of faces, seeing exhaustion and nervous strain on all of them, but no sign that any of them was frightened.
Might be a good idea to move on, people. The sound of those two shots might travel a long way through a silent forest.
The Rolling Stone gathers no bullets, so it is said. Perhaps we might find a decent roof to protect us for the night. But upon my soul, I think I have wrenched my leg.
Can you walk all right, Doc?
Oh, I trust so, my dear fellow. Just a spasm in the tendon behind the right knee. Nothing to concern yourself about. Personally, I would rather like to leave this rest area behind. As you so rightly commented, the noise of the bullets might attract some unwelcome company. The sun's already sinking, and the animal inside there will not smell any sweeter. Perhaps a fresh campsite for the night? What think the others?
I say we leave this place of death and blood and find a good campdown site. The smell of the corpse could attract other predators, and there isn't much shelter with the roof and door gone. It's kind of a pretty sight, but it's tainted now.
I agree with that.
And me.
I'm for heading out, Dad.
JB was checking over Mildred's blaster, carefully cleaning it and reloading the two spent rounds. He raised his head to look at the others.
Move on.
I'll make it unanimous, friends. Let's continue along the blacktop.